We're speaking with William Whitecloud tonight, and we are going to discuss The Magician's Way further. In fact, we're going to discuss it with you if you would like to. You can give us a call. Ross has given out the numbers, and we'll continue to do that. You can also send an email to me at johnb@coasttocoastam.com. We're going to very quickly take our little break and get it out of the way so we can have a nice long run to the bottom of the hour. So freshen up that tea and come back to your chair, your easy chair. It'll all be easy tonight on Coast to Coast AM. William Whitecloud, my head is expanding here as I listen to you talk about this stuff. Can we we were talking before we took these breaks that there's no conflict between any religious belief and what you're dealing with.
Not at all. I mean, it's really. You know, just as there wouldn't be a conflict between an artist and their religious belief, or any religious belief, if you look at a Monet and some scenic painting that Monet has painted, it is not in conflict with any religion. It's just a man who's channeled his creative faculties to produce a great work of art. And what we're talking about here is just, you know, tapping into our creative faculties to create a great piece of art or whatever end result, you know, great quality of life or great health or whatever. And, you know, to the question of whether you're tapping into a power within yourself or outside of yourself, really it's in a sense irrelevant to the creative discussion because, you know, as Colin Wilson, who I think is most probably the greatest authority on magic, has written 80 books on the subject. And, you know, Colin says that the first law about magicians is they don't know how they do what they do. So they don't know whether it's a power inside of themselves, outside of themselves. But the important thing is that if you're talking about power, is that the power is in the end result. And that there is an end result, and that's where the power is. And there's an assumption, not necessarily a trust, but a clarity that's the vision, that's the end result, and then an assumption that there is a force, that there is some ability somewhere, some force, let's call it, that is going to come to the fore and create the resources, create the insight, create the wisdom, create the synchronicities to help attract that into being a reality, into reality. And that's the best way I can put it, really.
Do you believe that, you know, when we were kids, we were encouraged to, you know, develop and learn things and, you know, stretch out and see what you can discover, see what you can invent, see what you can develop. And it seems to have, certainly not all schools, but certainly the mainstream media would have you think that the focus has shifted to conform, consume, do what we say, leave your weapons at home, don't bring them into the schoolhouse. And by the way, we've just broken another you know, schoolhouse drug ring, so to speak. Not, I'm just saying these are some of the problems that were once upon a time shoved way in the back, but now they're more at the front. So this is all leading up to the question. Are our establishments, school, government, so forth, causing us to repress this magical manifestation, which we would otherwise, you know, commit to the world and maybe perform those tricks we're not even aware of? I mean, are we being repressed by, is our society repressing us?
Well, it is, but I think that to really be honest and really to fully claim your own power, there has to be an admission of something more fundamental, which is that we are repressing ourselves to start with, and then, you know, obviously that's going to, it's just like this, John, if you have a compromised immune system, then something's going to find it easier to invade you from the outside. And also, if you've compromised yourself and you've compromised your own consciousness, then it's going to be easier for something outside of yourself to impose itself and limit your consciousness as well. And really, the important thing to establish here is that, you see, when you're a kid, and I've just been reading some scientific papers on this, is that what scientists are saying, chemists and scientists are saying, is that in the reading that I've been doing, is that when you're from the age of zero to about 5 or 6, that the wavelengths that your brain is operating on, if that's the right, you know, language, because I'm not a scientist, but the wavelength that your brain is operating on is exactly the same as someone who is under the influence of a hypnotist when you're being hypnotized. And I don't know if, you know, our listeners here can relate to this. I've been to shows where hypnotists have hypnotized people, and then, you know, they tell them that in the break they go and sit down. They'll sit down and they'll feel like they're sitting down on a red hot poker, or that ants are crawling all over them, or that they're Mick Jagger and they can sing. And you know, when these people are under this influence and their brains operating at that wavelength, they're totally susceptible to that suggestion, and then are hypnotized. They're conditioned, and their minds create a reality of what's been suggested to them. So that when we are in our infancy, we are in that hypnotic state of mind where we are so susceptible, and we're looking for validation of our nature, and through the unmet validation, we're making up beliefs about ourselves and others and the world. But slowly but surely, through the development of those beliefs, being in that hypnotic state, we're taking on beliefs about how, you know, the limits of our worth, the limits of our capability, the limits of our safety, etc., etc. And you know, actually, that is us, and the state that we're in, that state of susceptibility. And again, you know, scientists say we have to soak this up like sponges, because we've got to learn how to survive very quickly. And so that's why we just open sponges and we absorb everything. But the drawback of that is we take on some very self-limiting beliefs. But we're the absorbers of that. We're taking that on. And so we're the creators of that, primarily. And then, yes, of course, there are ways that society and the school system and parental guidance can either compound that or alleviate it to some degree. But one must always remember that really we're the ones that hypnotize ourselves most fundamentally, and then it falls to us to free ourselves. Like it does in any situation, whether it's psychological slavery that we can put ourselves in, or literal slavery, it's always going to come back to it. It's our responsibility, and I believe that before we look at anything else and any other systems and influences, and that we must look to ourselves to see what we believe and what we have taken on, and we must look to ourselves to rise above these illusions that we've created for ourselves. Because if we don't, we will forever just be disempowered. We will never claim back our own power.
And what will be the result of this in the end? Just a life that is not as fulfilled as it could have been, or are there some distinct negative side effects from this?
Yeah, look, always just as you say, always it's going to be a life that's not as fully realized as it could have been.
Well, in that case, William, what can you just amplify? You used a very interesting phrase just a minute ago, the compromise your consciousness. Are there any techniques for filtering out the false illusions? I mean, is there anything you can tell yourself? Or how do you get to the point where you can separate the wheat from the chaff?
Mm. Well, another good question. And can I just answer that by also continuing with what I was saying about
yes, any way you like
being under this illusion and its effect on us, and saying, yeah, generally you're going to have a more limited life than one could have had, and actually a far more limited life, but there are some seriously negative consequences. And I'll give you an example. And for reasons of anonymity, I can't tell you the person's exact problem. But it goes like this. I knew a woman whose father suffered from a condition. And as I say, for reasons of anonymity, let's just say that it was cancer. And her father died at a very young age from cancer. And then every man that she ever had a serious relationship then died of some form of cancer. It was very similar to this. and you know, you could really just so clearly see a pattern there, that in this formative psychic sponge stage that she was in, her father died from a debilitating illness. And then every man that she ever attracted into her life thereafter died from the same illness. She just attracted this into her life. And very unconsciously, you most probably not believe me and just find it too astounding that she never put it together that her father had died from a particular condition, and that all the men that she'd ever, you know, loved came into her life, became ill, and died from this similar condition in every situation. It had to be pointed out to her at one point, at some point, because she never really put it together herself. And it just shows you how unconscious we are of what we take on, and then how it plays out in our life. And I could give you millions of stories, well, thousands at least, from my own life, from people I know, of these patterns that then so obviously and concretely play out, and they're not fun, and we're not aware of them, and they do cause us suffering, and they do hold us back. And now to your question, John, is, well, how do you filter this out? How do you become aware of it? Well, I'll say this, is that when you, it just all goes back to what I was saying before. The answer to it, and it might sound simple, but my promise to you is that it is, yes, it is simple, but do not be fooled. It is very powerful, and it is, the answer is, in going back to what I was saying before, is start living an end result-based life, because that will begin bringing forth your creative nature, your creative spirit, your natural ability. And one of the effects of the emergence of your creative spirit and your natural ability, let's say, one of the effects is, and a very beneficial effect and a great effect, is that out of that arises awareness, arises wisdom. There's no other way of putting it. Once you begin operating in this orientation, you do begin waking up. It's a waking up process, and you just do start seeing through things. You start seeing through yourself. You start seeing through others. You start, you know, really having clarity. I'll give you a very quick example. You know, we were at a family reunion when I was 39 years old. And on this trip, I was astounded to realize how much a particular family member of mine criticized me. I mean, they hammered me. And when I raised it with that person and the rest of the family, you know, we had created a little family powwow. And what the rest of my family reflected to me was that from birth, this member of the family had hammered me, had criticized me mercilessly. But I had never, ever, and it might sound ridiculous to you, but I'd never been aware of it. It just used to go over my head. And on this particular holiday, or this reunion, I became aware of it. But it wasn't just a random becoming aware of it. It was a function of my waking up process. I was waking up to a lot of things that were going on that I just wasn't aware of. My own behaviors, other people's behaviors, patterns, whatever. And so I just do say, if I can stress, as I say, it might not sound powerful, it might sound too simple. Yes, it is simple, but by God, it's so powerful. It's to start living an end result orientated life, because that begins waking you up. It's actually the whole secret to magic. It's the thread that you begin pulling out by which magic begins unraveling in your life.
Now, you referred to alchemy earlier, and there are several different aspects of that, yes?
Yes.
And so this would be the spiritual aspect of it, rather than, turning lead into gold.
The literal chemical aspect of it, yes.
So this is, according to what I'm sorting out here, is an ultimate or alleged immaterial reality, an inner path enabling a person to discover the essence of their being, the deepest values and meanings by which people live.
Exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, we've got a couple of minutes here. Go ahead and roll. Just whatever.
And the lead being what I'm talking about now is this subconscious illusion that we originally subject to, this hypnosis, this imprisonment, this heavy vibration that we are living out of. And then the gold is the transcendence of that and coming to see things for what they really are, for who the self-realization of who we really are, what we're capable of, and the true model for approaching life. And that's a very interesting thing to talk about.
Well, we're going to stop here in just a minute. I'm trying not to push the brakes too close to their stopping point, because some of our affiliate stations do things that we are not aware of here in under command of the Los Angeles base. But we'll get a few calls lined up and some questions, and get into some actual specifics as to how people can bring some magic into their lives. Not sorcery, just magic. And then I also want to explore with you what led you to write The Magician's Way. And we shall return with William Whitecloud on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks, Ross. We'll be back with your telephone calls and comments and questions for William Whitecloud, author of The Magician's Way and soon to come, The Last Shaman, on Coast to Coast AM. William Whitecloud, tell me, when did you start writing The Magician's Way? And I take it this is an extrapolation. I'm guessing it's an extrapolation of your own personal experience.
It is. It's basically the basis of what I've uncovered about the subject of what I would call magic, because it's just such a really just such a an incredible way, an incredible approach to life that in some ways defies belief. You know, the usual model for us approaching life is very mechanical, and we just tend to assume that results are achieved by a linear, unbroken sequence of mechanical actions. And when you believe that, then the name of the game becomes learning how everything works. And we tend to come up with beliefs about how we should be and how things should be and others should be, and we subscribe to those beliefs and try to fulfill those, and that's what our life's about. And yet, I call it magic because there is another approach which doesn't totally dismiss that, but also comes at life from another way of looking at it, which isn't as linear and isn't as mechanical, and what I call creative, where, you know, A doesn't have to follow B. B doesn't have to follow A. C doesn't have to follow B. D doesn't have to follow C. Where we can make connections more dynamically between things and realize solutions and create outcomes outside of how we think it's supposed to be. And There's a body of information that I've accrued over the years in studying this. As I was telling you earlier, I had this incredible debilitating long-term illness that I miraculously, in a sense, recovered from, which made me profoundly curious as to what was, you know, underlying me coming back to life so powerfully, so miraculously, and it's in a sense become an obsession of mine ever since, and a profound interest that I've studied and how do we focus in life and what consequences does our focus lead to? And so the basics of my discoveries, as it were, and what I've learned, are encapsulated in The Magician's Way, which is an allegorical novel. It's a story with a message, and basically that message covers what I call the seven secrets of magic. And basically, I wanted to, convey what I'd learned, and I also wanted to do it in an interesting way. And so I started writing a book, and I actually applied the techniques that I even talk about in the book. And in applying the approach that I was even writing about, the book just turned into a story, and I just followed it, and I hardly even knew paragraph to paragraph what I was writing about, but I wrote and I wrote, and I just kept in mind the end result of what I wanted to achieve, and in the end, this story unfolded, and conveyed all the insights that I wanted to convey, and even gave birth to some new insights. And in a sense, it was a real piece of magic, one of the great magic creations of my life, one of the great magic moments of my life, because, as I say, I applied the very secrets of magic to writing the book, because I'm not educated as a writer. I've not studied writing or anything like that, and yet, in just applying these techniques, this book came out, and if I can say so myself, to my satisfaction anyway, it has really encapsulated the secrets that I wanted to cover, the concepts that I wanted to cover, and in an interesting way. And other people seem to think so, because it really has been done very well in Australia, where I'm from, and over there it's by far the best-selling metaphysical book that's ever been published by an Australian author anyway.
Now, you know, we can't talk very much about this book without giving it away, which is because it's a nice read. It's a very nice read. It's very clever. And, I want to talk about it, but it's hard to talk about it without giving it away. You know what I mean? I'll tell you what let's do. Let's see if we can bring somebody onto the bridge to just start firing questions off at you. Okay. Wild card number one, we have Bruce in Milwaukee. Bruce, come up on the bridge and visit with us for a minute.
Are you there?
Hello. We are there. Are you there? Yes, you are.
How you doing, sir?
Doing all right.
I've studied many things in my life. UFOs, New World Order. I've been reading for over 40 years. I did the Hidden Hands interview on the internet, what everybody should read. Are you familiar with that?
Sorry, what was that?
The Hidden Hands interview?
No, sorry, I'm not familiar.
That's what you ought to read. But anyway, I want to ask you one question. I've had things on from coast to coast that have grabbed you in the night, and I've been grabbed in the night, and it's not fun. Let me tell
you. What exactly do you mean by that?
I've been grabbed by spirits that were trying to hurt me.
Gotcha.
Because I knew something I shouldn't say.
Right.
Okay? I've been grabbed.
Yes.
And it's not fun. It's not a good time. That's been on coast to coast before. But I want to ask this man one question. What are you going to do with the New World Order? Because everybody in the world should realize we're being hoodwinked. We're being driven
We're not really dealing with the world order right now, man. As a matter of fact, as far as self-actualization is concerned, I would have to say that that whole bloody thing should be shelved in our minds from time to time, lest it become some sort of an obsession that prevents us from doing anything. Thanks for ringing. Wow, that was unexpected. You know what I mean? What the hell do we do about the New World Order, William?
Well,
clearly there is one, but really, not to just poo-poo the man's question, this is something that's on everybody's mind, the collective mind and the individual minds. It's a repression, and it seems to me that just to extrapolate something here briefly. Sounds to me like what you're promoting is certainly a mental antidote to it. Just go on and live your life anyway, and then take the action as needed when the moment comes upon you to do so, then act. But in the meantime, don't let this become some all-consuming obsession. Am I leading you, or am I close?
No, that's my take on it exactly. You know, there's a lot going on in the world and in life, and I respect people's take on what's going on, and I even agree with it, and I sympathize with it, but my take is just simply this: is that I have my life, and I think, you know, everyone has their life, and we're all part of the whole. We belong to a collective. We're not separate, and we all belong to and you know, we can't ignore that any longer. Is that we have to act accordingly. We have to act according to the fact that we are, you know, connected to the whole. And here's the thing, though, is that with everything going on, and you can point to all sorts of things going on. I mean, there's every kind of thing imaginable going on, as we know, politically, economically, metaphysically. But what is my role in that? What should I pay attention to? What should I concern myself? Because I can become concerned in all sorts of things. I can pay attention to all sorts of things. But according to my worldview, the best thing that I can do is pay attention to, you know, my purpose and my direction and what I'm called to. And in so doing, in ways that I don't understand and that I can't calculate, but if I'm true to myself and I deal with what I've got to deal with, which sometimes can just be spending time with my family, being there for my kids, I don't know, whatever it is, taking people on safaris to Africa and showing them the fascinating joys of life, could be that. It could be helping someone with an illness they're suffering from. In some cases, coming close to what that gentleman was talking about, sometimes what I'm doing is counseling people that are having unwanted visitations from people that have already passed. But whatever it is, I take it on, you know, step by step, moment by moment, according to what is true for me to pay attention to. And what's true for me to pay attention to is not the same as what's true for you, John, to pay attention to, or somebody else. Sometimes we pay attention to the same things. But in being connected to our power and recognition of what our lives are really about, and aspiring to that and following that, then I believe that we do take care of the whole. If everyone tends, as it were, if you imagine this analogy, if everyone tended to their own backyard, then we would have a great world with a great environment. And that's my, you know, hit on it, actually.
Well, it almost goes back to the do what's best for you. I don't mean avariciously. But,
not at all.
The willingness to mess somebody over to get what you want. But just if you'll do what is best for you, in effect, you'll be doing what's best for everybody else.
Exactly.
All right, let's hear from Justin, Mount Pleasant, Michigan, east of the Rockies for sure. Justin, come up on the bridge, if you will, and talk to us.
Hi there. Yeah, I was just curious if you looked into the work of Jiddu Krishnamurti at all?
No.
Okay, because a lot of what you say, similar to what he has said, he was like the last living Buddha, basically.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, like, you want to get your inner self in harmony before the rest of the world's going to come in harmony, and a lot of people just tend to look outside themselves, so they never end up working on themselves at all. And that's basically, I was just going to ask you about him and recommend you check out some of his stuff.
Thanks for the call. I think it's the distraction thing again, looking outward too much and not looking inward enough.
Yep.
Okay. All right, Cheryl in Phoenix, are you there? Way out west.
Hello, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Hello. Well, I'm hearing what you say, and what I'd like to know is it more of an elevation of your joy coming into a creative focus?
Sorry, I'm not hearing the questions too clearly.
Say that again, Cheryl. You were saying elevating your joy, and what was the rest of it?
Well, as I hear him, I hear that he allowed himself to be joyful, and in that joy, he became more creative and focused.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Did you get that, William?
Yeah, Cheryl, I hear you now. Yeah, and you have got it. Although, not specifically joyful necessarily, but definitely, allowed myself some slack. cut myself some slack, if you like. And actually, without any really, truly without any expectation of the outcome, and from that, you know, this great result. As I was saying earlier, it's the taking the pressure off. It's taking the stress off. It's taking the control off, really. And in another way of putting it, you could just say letting go.
Okay. All right, very good. Let's see. I'm looking at the clock here. I think we have time for one more. Do we, LA Command? I think we do. First-time caller, Hussein in Connecticut. Hit, come up on the bridge and hit us with your question.
Right. Good morning, John B.
Good morning.
Good morning, Captain. I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
Like, for example, are you familiar with Aleister Crowley?
Not intimately. I'm aware of who Aleister Crowley is, but I'm not a student of Aleister Crowley.
Oh, you are?
No,
he is not. No, he's not. He knows who he is, but he's not a student of his work.
Is.
No. So I'd like to ask John B. Well, I'm pretty sure he's familiar. He's not no novice about the fallout. Aleister Crowley and Madame Blavatsky and Alice Bailey had.
Right.
We're in the 21st century, I believe.
Yeah.
If I look at the conflict of ideas, you look at the same different analogies and things like that. And I concur with 90% of the things he's saying. However, I'm not going to purchase a book and not have no dialogue with certain individuals and me miss the bigger picture. I'm not condemning the book, not condoning it. However, if I'm with that person, you know, and I'm corresponding with him, like me, I dealt with 20-plus years with a lot of individuals with the arcane, with the esoteric level, good and bad, those things you dealt with, and et cetera, and it just disappeared, whatever, on politics, on the arcane, et cetera. And now we're living in some, I mean, a lot of individuals, like I've been listening close for like 20 years on and off, and many partial hosts and things like that. I concur with George Norrie. And for example, if we look at World War II, I look at the three leaders who is the most religious, and I asked my friend from Europe, I said, so why are you reading that book? I said, look, we're in America. You could concur with me, John B. Well, you could dissent or have conflict view. She said they should do a lot of bad things. So I know 90% of individuals from coast to coast, they believe in karma, especially people from California and New York and different ideas. And I've dealt with individuals with all races and nationalities. I'm not closed-minded. I'm quiet.
All right. Well, I think I missed your question, but thanks very much for ringing in. As far as Aleister Crowley, and it might even be Crowley, we'll have to discuss him and his influences, if any, at another time. But at the moment, we're with William Whitecloud, and we'll take your calls later and continue discovering the Magician's Way on Coast to Coast AM.